Tachnunchas. Rabbanai used to make simanim on the caves where there were dead bodies, so people wouldn't walk over them and accidentally become tameh. When he came to the kever of Avram Avinu, he saw Eliezer, his servant, standing at the entrance of the Maras HaMachpelah. He asked Eliezer what Avram was doing, and Eliezer told him that he was sleeping in the arms of Sarah. Avram then added, and he said, "Don't worry about me doing this, since in Olam Haba there is no Yetzer Hara, so this isn't against the Midos of Tznius." He then came to the kever of Adam HaRishon, who was also buried there in Maras HaMachpelah. By the way, Maras HaMachpelah is called also Kiryas Arba, as we see in the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Nun Gimel. Since, as Rabbi Yitzchak said, it's in the Kiryas Arba Zugais, the place where four pairs are buried, Adam and Chava, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah. There are two caves of Machpelah, a top cave and a bottom cave, and both of them are the same size. The Gemara says everyone compared to Sarah was like a monkey compared to a person. That's how chashev she was. There was a maisa where a man had sons, but he was never sure which one was his real son and which ones weren't. When he died, he wrote in his tzava, "I'm leaving all of my properties to my one son." Of course, he didn't know who the one son was, and no one else knew either which son was supposed to get the Yerusha. So Rabbanai said, "All of you, who are potentially sons, go and bang on the kever of your father. Hit it, until your father gets up and identifies the son who should inherit the land." One of the sons did not want to go and bang. Then when Rabbanai paskened, he said that all of the nechasim go to that son, the one who didn't bang. The Rashbam says, he paskened based on shuta d'dayna, assessment of the dayan, circumstantial evidence which proved that the father loved this son the most, that's why he probably refused to bang. Gemara says any dayan who is sued and judgment is given against him becomes pasul to be a dayan. And anyone who drinks some wine at the right time, ka'alacha, will not come to sickness. It is written over the gateway of Kaputkia, "An pag, an bag, an tal." Rashbam explains that these all represent the shiurim of a revius. Taisa says these represent the names of medicines. The Mishnah. One does not establish a chazaka with a drain pipe, because it's not permanent. A gutter, however, can be used to create a chazaka, since it is permanent. So the silence of the owner of the chatzar indicates that he consents to the placement. A temporary ladder cannot create a chazaka, but a permanent ladder can. Daf Nun Tes, Gemara. If Reuven has a pipe that spills water into the chatzar of Shimon, and Reuven wants to close off the pipe, Shimon can protest, since just like you had a zchus, or a chazaka, to spill water into my chatzar, I now have the zchus, chazaka, to keep water that comes from your chatzar. The Mishnah. If Reuven has a projection that goes into a field more than a tefach, he has a chazaka and can keep it there, since if Shimon had a problem with it originally, he should have protested. But Shimon can protest before the end of 3 years, but of course after 3 years it becomes a chazaka. If it's less than a tefach, there's no din of chazaka, since this is not a shear which is considered chashiv. Gemara. We hold the reason all this applies with the projections going on into someone else's field is because it ruins the privacy. As we know, we've said before from Daf Beis, Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek. Mishnah. Reuven is not allowed to open up a window into a chatzar he owns with someone else because of Hezek Re'iyah. Once he opens up the window, the other person will lose privacy because this person who has now the window could see into the other person's house. If Reuven buys a house which looks over into a different chatzar, he also shouldn't open the house into that chatzar, since it will now increase traffic into the chatzar. But he is allowed to build extra rooms in his house or an attic without a private entrance into that chatzar, but only an entrance into the house, because this doesn't ruin the privacy as much. Gemara. You can't open up a window into a chatzar hashutfin, since this is considered hezek re'iyah. The Gemara also says that in a case of Shimon, who opened a window overlooking his neighbor's Reuven's yard, and after some time elapsed, Reuven decided to request that Shimon board up his window because it was infringing on his property, Rabbi Shmuel said and ruled in favor of Shimon, who maintained that since Reuven originally allowed him to open the window and didn't immediately object, he thereby obtained a chazaka, the right to keep the window there permanently. We say, however, the halacha follows Rabbi Chia, who ruled that Shimon is required to board up the window. The Rashbam explains that although Rabbi Chia agrees to the concept of chazaka, he holds that it takes 3 years to establish such a chazaka. Therefore, he ruled that Shimon must close his window because his window was open in that place for less than 3 years, and they therefore lack the minimum time necessary for establishing a chazaka, i.e. for 3 years. Dafsama. Extra rooms in a house is okay. But why? If we were worried before about your reason you can't do an addition to a house and open up the door into the chatzar is because it will increase traffic. So if you put extra rooms in a house and you open up those rooms into the house, eventually people will walk out of the house and therefore it will also increase traffic. So why isn't that a problem? More answers that the Mishnah doesn't mean adding a room mamish, but rather taking an old room and splitting it into half. That's what you're allowed to do. But to really add completely a new room, you'd have the same problem of increasing traffic, and that would be aser. The next Mishnah. A person isn't allowed, if he's a shutef in a chatzer, to stick a door opposite someone else's or a window opposite someone else's. But toward the Rishus HaRabim, you would be allowed to do this. Because for a Rishus HaRabim, we don't really care. There is no privacy. But in a chatzer, there is privacy, and therefore you would have hezek ri'ya. Gemara. We learn this iser of opening up a window across from someone else's house, and that's aser, from Bilam. Since he gave a bracha to Klal Yisrael, because he saw people didn't stick doors of tents opposite the others. Matayvu ahalecha Yaakov, mishkanasecha Yisrael. It's okay to open into a Rishus HaRabim, because he can tell his neighbor, you need to conceal your privacy from the Rishus HaRabim anyways. Therefore, my window isn't going to add to what you have to do vis-a-vis your privacy, because there's a whole Rishus HaRabim out there anyway. Mishnah. You're not allowed to build a well or a cave under a Rishus HaRabim, because it might collapse and people might get hurt. Rebbe Elazar says, it's mutter if it's strong enough to hold a heavy wagon with stones. You're also not allowed to build a gezustera, a projection that protrudes into a Rishus HaRabim. And the Gemara says, the Rabbanu were machmer not to build a wall or a cave under a Rishus HaRabim, since even though today it may be strong enough to hold the traffic, but it may weaken over the next couple of years and then collapse later on and still hurt people. When a person wants to give musr, he should first be sure that he's in good shape. Then he can give musr to someone else. Kshait atzmecha v'achar kach kshait acherim. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Libracha, in Likutei Sichas, discusses this inyan of kshait atzmecha v'achar kach kshait acherim, that first you should adorn yourself and then adorn others. This doesn't mean that one should wait until he's perfect entirely before he can give musr to others. What it means is that via a person's self-improvement, it will influence others, for they'll follow his example. In other words, if people see that one person is working on himself, so he should get better, that in of itself will be an example to others, as musr to others, so they should also become better. The Gemara says land which has been taken over by the public cannot be reclaimed for private use. Taisfus on Daf Yud Beis points out that this halacha only applies if it became public property, birshus. In other words, the owner said it's okay for people to walk on my property, and therefore make it like a public path. But if the public went and used this person's private property without rishus, then at any point, the person who owns the private property can take it back as being the private owner of that property. The Gemara says it's usher to stucco or decorate a house because of a velus for the Beis HaMikdash. But if it was already decorated, then you can keep it that way, and you don't have to change it because of a velus to the Beis HaMikdash. The halacha, however, follows the kula, which is stated by the next brisa, that one is permitted to plaster his house with lime as long as he leaves a small unplastered area opposite the entrance. And this is referring to an area of 1 amma by 1 amma, which is a little bit less than 2 square feet. When the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, many members of Klal Yisrael took it upon themselves not to eat meat or drink wine. Today we're not machmer on this. This is a gzeira, which is difficult for most of the population to comply with. When a person makes a big su'udah, he should leave out a little bit of food, zecher l'churban. As the pasuk in Tehillim says, im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yamini. What's pshat on the end of the pasuk? Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yamini, al reish simchasi. What is al reish simchasi referring to? More answers, it's referring to the ashes that we put upon the head of a chasan before the chuppah, zecher l'churban. The Sefer Yalkut HaGirshuni points out, but the Gemara in Yavama says, Kal ha-sharei b'lai isha, sharei b'lai simcha. The beginning of simcha in a man's life is when he gets married. Hence, at the moment, at that exact moment, just before the chuppah, he must remember the churban of Yerushalayim. That's why we put the ashes on his head, on the place where the tefillin are worn. The Gemara says, Kal ha-misabel al Yerushalayim zeiche v'raya b'simchasa. Anyone who mourns for Yerushalayim will be zeiche to see the simcha of the redemption of the ge'ula. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha says, ever since the Roman Empire imposed harsh decrees on the Jewish people, restricting them from keeping the mitzvahs, studying Torah, and going to a bris milah, it would be fitting for the Rabbanim to aser Jewish marriages altogether. The Rashbam explains that it would be preferable not to have children, rather than have the Romans force them to go without a bris milah and transgress mitzvahs. However, this too would be too difficult for the majority of people, says Rabbi Shmuel, and therefore the Rabbanim permitted Jewish marriages to continue. The Mordechai in Yevamos attaches halakh ramifications to Rabbi Shmuel's statement. The Gemara in Yevamos says that if a couple was married for 10 years and were not blessed with any children, the husband is required to divorce so he can remarry and fulfill the mitzvah of Peru or Revu. The Mordechai suggests our Gemara as a possible source as to why nowadays the Besdin does not enforce this halakha. They do not compel a husband to divorce after 10 barren years of marriages, as is brought in Kuntres al Adaf. He says, perhaps Besdin no longer compels one to fulfill his mitzvah of Peru or Revu due to the fact that Rabbi Shmuel indicates that nowadays it would be appropriate to ban marriages altogether. Although the ban was never put into effect, nevertheless, he says, it is a sufficient reason not to compel one to marry or have children. This marks the end of this perek. Now let's begin the fourth perek, perek Revi, HaMecher Es Habayis, the Mishnah. If someone sells a house, the small rooms, which are called the Yitziah, around it, are not automatically included in the sale. Also, the small inner chamber is not included either, even if it opens up into the house. Also, the roof isn't included if it has a fence of more than 10 tefachim high. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the fence isn't 10 tefachim high, but if the entrance from the house to the roof has a tzuris ha-pesach, sort of a look of an entranceway, so it's obvious that it's separate from the house, it's not included. Gemara. The yitziah is not part of the house, only if it's at least dalad by dalad amas. Otherwise, it is considered part of the house and would automatically be included in the sale of the house. If someone sells a field to his friend, amongst a large valley of fields, only the small field is sold, not the entire valley. If someone sells land, and he describes the boundary on one side as long and one side as short, how much land does he mean to sell? Rav says, only land as long as the short side. Rav Kahana says, draw a diagonal line between the long and the short side, and then split it that way. If a person sells property, and on the bill of sale he outlines three sides of the land, but doesn't draw an outline of the fourth side, how much does the buyer get? What was meant in this particular sale? Rav says, he gets all of it except the fourth quadrant. Shmuel says, he gets the fourth quadrant as well. Rav Asi says, he only gets one side, but the halacha is like Rav. The Rashbam points out that in all of these cases, the halacha should really be based on shuda d'dayna, that each judge should apply his judgment to each individual case on its own merit. For example, in a case where he knows that the seller is a stingy person, he should rule in favor of the seller, assuming that he intended to retain a strip of land for himself. If the seller is a generous person, then the judge should assume that he probably meant to sell the entire field. The Rashbam also points out that the halacha of shuda d'dayna is really special in this case, because normally when we're not sure who owns what, we follow the rule of hamotzi mechaveru olav haraya, and we say the person who is the muchzak at that time, the person who presently has possession of the disputed item, he gets to keep the field, which in this case would be the seller. But here, because of these particular cases where there's a question mark, here the Gemara paskens shuda d'dayna, and therefore the dayan, the judge, rules based on evidence and based on how he feels in that particular case, who would get what portion of the field. If someone owns land beshutfis with a partner and he wants to sell it, if he says the half that I have I want to sell, he means that he wants to sell his whole half. But if he says half in the land that I have, we say that he means half of what he has, i.e. one quarter. Daf Samach Gimel. If someone says, give a chelek of my boar, of my pit, to someone, Subcha says he gets no less than a quarter, since the only part in question is half of it. So that half is split between the two, since Subchas holds Mamun Hamutal Besafik Chalkin. If a Levi sells a field to a Yisrael on the Tanai that the Meiser should eventually be given back to him, we say that the Tanai is Kayim. The Gemara explains that actually the Levi is not empowered to attach such a stipulation requiring the buyer to give him all the Meiser, because really there's a rule that says, Ein Adam Makne Dover Shaloba Li'olam. A person cannot affect a transaction with something that hasn't come about into the world yet. The Gemara therefore explains that the seller's stipulation that he receives the Meiser is to be interpreted as meaning that he wants to be Mishayer, he wants to retain 1/10 ownership in the field, and that partial ownership entitles him to all the subsequent Meiser, which is actually 1/10. The Gemara says, if someone sold a house and said, I'm selling it al menas that I keep the upper balcony, he gets to keep this upper balcony. And in fact, even if this upper balcony collapses, he can rebuild it. And finally, if someone sells a house, we say that the well of water in the backyard is not automatically included in the sale. Daf Samach Daled. The Mishnah. When the seller sells a house, the well in the backyard is not automatically included, even if he says, I'm giving up the depth and the height. And if the well still belongs to the Meicher, Rabbi Akiva says, if he wants to get to it, he must buy the right-of-way. But the Chachamim say that the Meicher retains his right-of-way to the boor, since a Meicher sells b'ayin ra, he sells in an ungenerous fashion. The Gemara. A boor is dug from hard dirt, but a dus is built with soft walls. The machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is that Rabbi Akiva holds Meicher b'ayin yafa Meicher. When a seller sells something, he sells in a generous manner. So if he wants the right-of-way to the wall, he must now buy it back, because when he sold everything, lock, stock, and barrel, which means he sold the right-of-way as well. If he wants that back, he has to buy it back. The Rabbanan say, Meicher b'ayin ra Meicher. Therefore, because he doesn't really sell it with a full heart, he leaves himself the ability to still use the right-of-way, and therefore he doesn't have to buy back the right-of-way. And finally, if someone sells a field, the well, the wine press, and the chicken coop are not included in the deal. Daf Samachay. It's a machlekes between Rav and Shmuel if we paskin like Rabbi Akiva or the Chachamim. If we have two houses, one opens into the other to get to a Rishus HaRabim, and the owner sold or gave them to two different people, we say he gave them both equally b'ayin yafa, and therefore neither has the right of way over the other. But if the inner person got it as a gift and the outer one got it as a purchase, then the inner one has the right to go through the outer house, since the inner clearly got his b'ayin yafa. He got it b'matana. The next Mishnah. If someone sells a house, the rule is that anything attached to the house is automatically included. So the door is included, but not the key, because the key is not attached. The base of an oven is included, because it's attached, but the tanur itself, which is not connected, is not included. If, however, at the time of sale, the seller says, I'm giving you whatever is in it, all inside the house is included. Gemara. The Mishnah is not like Rav Meir, who said, when you sell a vineyard, even the unconnected items are included in the sale. A pipe that was carved out and then attached to the ground, if water goes through this pipe into a mikveh, it's considered to be mayim she'uvim, which is water gathered via a kli. Mayim she'uvim means it doesn't actually come in there by itself, but it gets gathered through a kli, through the use of a kli. And this would passel the mikveh, because mayim she'uvim passels a mikveh. If, however, it was kavoy v'lo b'saif chakaku, first the wood or stone was attached to the ground, then it was carved out, it doesn't passel the mikveh, since the water that passes through it, it's like passing through the ground. The ground doesn't have a shame keli, so the water doesn't become she'uvim. Since it was placed in there before anything was done to it, it's as if it's part of the ground, and therefore water that passes through it is not called mayim she'uvim. A man made a beehive, which is cemented to the ground. Rabbi Eliezer says it's considered like karka. So the same kinyanim that work on karka would work on this as well, kesef, shtar, or chazaka. And a prusbel would be written, or would be able to be written on this as well. We know a prusbel transfers the loan of a malva over to Bezdin. So in a year of Shemitah, the loiva still has a chiyuv to pay back the loan. Normally we know that when Shemitah comes along, any loans that are outstanding become null and void. Hillel HaZaken, in seeing that this would be a problem right before Shemitah year, anticipated that people who were wealthy would not want to lend money before Shemitah, and therefore poor people would have a hard time borrowing money. Therefore he created this halacha of prusbel, which allows you to write a shtar, so that you transfer the ownership of the loan from the malva himself to a bezdin. Bezdin then, if a person owes money to bezdin, then he has to pay it back, and Shemitah is not meshameh to that loan, and therefore the loan has to be paid back. In addition to this halacha, this beehive is not mekabel tuma, since it's not considered a keli. And while in position, if you remove honey from it on Shabbos, you're chayav to bring a carbon chatas, since it's like tolish. And tolish is a tolda of kaitzer. The Chachamim say it's not considered light karka, therefore you cannot write a prusbel on it, and there's no chiyuv of tolish b'shabbos. The Rashbam explains that prusbel doesn't work under the klal of the fact that you owe the money to Bezdin, but rather it works under the klal of hefker Bezdin hefker. In order for a prusbel to be effective, we know the leiva must own some karka, even if it's just a kol shehu of karka. Rashi explains that the reason this is so is so that the transaction will be viewed as a milsa de shchicha, a usual transaction. The fact is that a malva normally would not lend money to a person without some form of collateral, and collateral is usually in the form of land. Therefore, in order to make it a milsa de shchicha, something which is common, the person who is the leiva must own a bit of land as well. This is, of course, consistent with the purpose of prusbel in the first place. Prusbel is a reassurance to the malva that if he lends money, he will not lose it after the Shemitah year comes around. The same thing is true with the fact that as long as the leiva owns land, he has the reassurance that there is some form of collateral for him to collect in case the leiva does not pay up. Daf Samach Vav. Just like if you detach a branch on Shabbos from a tree, you're chayav for the malacha of Tailish, so too if you take honey from its source on Shabbos, you're chayav for Tailish according to Rebbe Eliezer. If you attach a baker's board to a wall, Rebbe Eliezer says it's considered like karka, so it isn't mekabel tuma. But the Chachamim say it's not like karka, therefore it can be mekabel tuma. The Mishnah in Kalim, Perek Yud Aleph, says that metal doors, hinges, or locks are not mekabel tuma because they do not function as kalim in their own right. They're manufactured to be used while attached to the house. Therefore, since they function as part of the karka, they're classified as karka. The Rambam adds that these kalim are classified as karka as soon as they're manufactured, even before they actually become attached to the house, since their entire purpose is only to function as part of the house. The psul of mayim she'uvim, which we mentioned before by mikveh, is only considered a psul midrabanan, not a psul midaraisa. Finally, if liquid falls on food, the food now becomes at that moment ro'oi lekabel tuma. But that's only if the owner wants the liquid to fall on it. Then it can become ro'oi lekabel tuma, or what they call mukshir lekabel tuma. If the owner doesn't want that to happen, or the liquid to fall on it, it does not become mukshir lekabel tuma. Daf Samach Zayin, the Mishnah. If one sells a chotzer, the sale automatically includes the houses that open into the chotzer, as well as the bayres, sichen, uma'aris, the pits, the cavities, i.e. the wells and so on, and the caves that are within that particular chotzer, or in those houses. It does not, however, include the metaltalin, or loose items that service the house, for example, an air conditioner. Rebbe Eliezer says, if you sell a chotzer, it doesn't include anything except the chotzer itself. Gemara. If stores open up into the chotzer, they are also included in the sale of the chotzer. If the stores, however, open into a reshus harabim, then those stores are not included in the sale automatically. If the store opens into both the reshus hayachid, the chotzer, and into the reshus harabim, we look to see where most of the purchases are made, and that will determine whether it's part of the chotzer or not. The Gemara says if someone sells two different types of properties, one has sand which can produce glass, and one has a riverbed which can yield precious stones, a kinyan chazaka on one will not work as a kinyan for the other. Why? Since their uses are very different. So just because you make a chazaka on one does not automatically entitle you to a kinyan on the other. The next Mishnah. If someone sells a house where the olive press is located, the equipment that is set up in this base habad, which is kavua, is automatically considered part of the deal. However, the metaltalin are not included automatically as part of the deal. If the seller, however, says, I'm selling everything in the Beis Chabad, then we say even the metaltalin are automatically included. Rebbe Eliezer says, a person who sells a Beis Chabad only automatically gets the press, the olive press, by itself, not the other support equipment. Even those that are considered kavua and part of it, he's not entitled to that. Only the press itself is automatically included in the sale. The next Mishnah. If someone sells a bathhouse, the sale does not automatically include the chairs, the rugs, or the towels. But the Gemara says the storage cabinets for the towels are included in the sale. The next tape, B'mitzvah Hashem, will begin from the Mishnah on Daf Samaches, but in the meantime, at this point, we will conclude our share.